Okay, so Be'ezus Hashem, we're going to begin Maharal Tiferes Yisrael. We're going to begin from the first perek. Tiferes Yisrael, the Maharal says, is named for it's a sefer discussing the greatness of the Jewish people and the greatness of the Torah. And therefore, he says that the name is very appropriate, Tiferes Yisrael. The magnificence or the grandeur of the Jewish people. Now, what is the grandeur of the Jewish people? The grandeur of the Jewish people is its Torah. So therefore, this is the name of the Sefer. The magnificence or the grandeur of the Jewish people, referring to the Jewish people crowned with the Torah. So we're going to go straight into the Sefer. I'll just note also, Maharal is a Sefer to learn. I've often felt like you need a certain siyata d'shmaya to get from his esoteric language to the very, very enlightening points that he's making. And another very unique aspect about Maharal in general, it's a very voluminous, it's many volumes and it's quite lengthy, but it's a sefer that can really provide a person with an entire system of hashkafa that he can live with, if you manage to connect between his very esoteric style and the very practical hashkafic points that he's conveying. So let's begin. Let's move into the Maharal's world and move that into our world. So the Maharal begins in the first perek by saying as follows. Again, I'm going to be following the structure of the perek in a general way, but not reading inside. I'll make a note of it when we're beginning another paragraph, etc. We're beginning from the beginning. The Maharal says as follows. He asserts the following. He says, all of Hashem's creatures, all the creations in the world, in our world, in the upper worlds, all function in a way that reflects their nature and reflects their place in Hashem's plan. So the heavenly bodies operate on a heavenly scale, on a celestial scale. Their effect, you know, spans light years, and they impact, well, all of life. And they reflect a heavenly nature and a heavenly function. Now, the earth is something more earthly, but it also operates on a very grand scale. It's sprouting forth in a very, very massive way. It's busy sprouting things, etc. And in all of earth, you have very many different creatures. Each one functions in a certain way, which reflects its nature and reflects its place in the world. The world is one big interactive system with everybody contributing their share to this broad system, right? The sun provides life, light, growth, okay? The moon tempers that with its properties. You have the seas providing earth what they provide it with. And all the different creatures are all providing somehow to this big, balanced, interactive system of what we call the universe, which really is centered around earth. I don't mean naturally, I mean in terms of Hashem's plan. Now, he says, where does man fit into this picture? Man functions in a way that he shares many things in common with the animals around, and if you just see him going about his natural life, you don't see him doing things that are greater than the animals, and if anything, the other way around. Man spends a lot of time maintaining his needs, right? He works for his food. He works for his shelter. He spends much of his life on that. And how does this function reflect the essence of what man is? So the Maharal says it doesn't. And he brings an interesting Gemara in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, and here we're up to the paragraph that begins with Besayf. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, Reb Shimon Reb Elezer said, I never saw a deer acting as a woodcutter, or as a woodcutter or as a date harvester. I never saw a lion act as a porter. I never saw a fox as a storekeeper. Meaning, they aren't busy laboring for their parnasa, and yet, they receive their parnasa with relative ease. They don't have to put as much effort into their own maintenance as man does. So then he says, now, all these animals are only here for the purpose of serving man. And I'm here for the purpose of serving my Creator. So he says, now, if all these animals that are created just for the purpose of serving me, they get their parnasa relatively easily, meaning they don't have to be so busy with clothing, they don't have to be so busy with shelter, they don't have to work so hard with so many steps leading up to earning their keep. They go straight, they hunt a little bit, they get their food, they eat plants, whatever it is, they eat and that's all. They don't have to go through all the making a living, et cetera, in order to eat, in order to have clothing. Clothing is just not an issue for them. In order to have shelter, man has to be doing all these things in order just to live the life of an animal. It's so much more complex for man and requires so much more effort. Now, you'll tell me, no, man lives, it does a lot more than an animal, right? He lives, there's much more luxury in man's life. But again, it's all just bodily comfort. So he's taking eating to another level, shkoyach, right? With all of his shelter, with all of his comforts, it's really all just taking the physical comforts that many animals enjoy in a much more natural way and simple, straightforward way. So he's taking it to higher levels. But he says, on the contrary, man, if man is really being served by all these animals, he should be able to live even more comfortably and more in a more straightforward way. So the Maharal says that the point that this Gemara is making is that everything that we see man doing, that man has to do in order to maintain his physical existence, does not reflect the nature of man. It doesn't reflect man's place in the system. It doesn't reflect man's place in the universe. Because, and here's the point, whereas the animals are all part of a physical system, man is actually a godly being. And therefore, man's primary function, the function that defines man, has to be some godly function. All the rest has to just be technical upkeep. But there has to be some godly function that defines what man is, that reflects man's essence, and that reflects man's place in the system. Now here, this point really is very simple. We all understand where Maharal is going. Of course, he's referring to Torah and mitzvahs. Torah and mitzvahs is the essence. It reflects exactly what man is. Man is godly, and therefore man operates in a godly place. Man operates in a godly zone. This kind of connects to what we discussed in the drasha last week, that man really is his neshama, and therefore the acts that he does are really acts that reflect the neshama, that are busy building the neshama, that are centered around the neshama, and that are not centered around the body and not there for the upkeep of the body. Everything done for the upkeep of the body or for the enhancement of the body is really just nothing more than that. It's upkeep of the office. But it's not the essence of man's function. It's not what reflects what man really is. Man is a godly being operating in a godly zone, kind of hovering over the rest of life in this world. The rest of life in this world is operating at the physical level. Man has a certain level of upkeep that he does there as well. But man's essential function, what he's essentially doing, what essentially reflects what he is, are the things that he's doing at the godly level. It's the godly zone that he's operating in, and this is what the mitzvahs, done in the realm of the neshama, that's the essence of man. So now the Maharal asks an interesting question. All of the rest of the world, their essential function is something natural, inevitable, instinctive. If we're going to say that the essence of what man is and the essence of man's function is in the godly zone, is the Torah and mitzvahs, why isn't that instinct? Why doesn't that happen by itself? All of the heavenly bodies are busy performing their function, like we say, Le'ishanu es tafkidam. It happens like clockwork. All the animals also, they do exactly what they're supposed to do. They operate on instinct. You'll never see an animal with struggling with a real moral struggle. They'll follow their instincts, and that's how they live their entire life from beginning to end. So Why? Because once again, this is what they are in the Bria. This function is a piece of the Bria. Not just the animal itself, but its function also is a piece of the Bria, and therefore it operates like clockwork. It happens by itself or instinctively. Why wouldn't man's godly function happen instinctively also? Now here the Maharal in his esoteric way is laying down some fundamentals that he's going to build on, which we already know the answer to, but we're going to follow the Maharal's build-up. And the Maharal says that the truth is that yes, the neshama would naturally, instinctively, just operate in a godly way. But there is a built-in, we'll call it in a superficial way, there's a built-in mutation. Now you can have an animal, if it's born with some sort of significant mutation, it will operate against its instincts. It will operate differently, or it might even have a body that's different from what it naturally is. So there's a built-in mutation called the Yetzer Hara that's constantly setting things off track. Or it's trying to set things off track. It's steering in that direction. And in order for the godly neshama to do its natural thing, it needs to overcome the Yetzer Hara. But that's not really what the Maharal is getting into now. He's kind of saying that as a side point. His primary point is this. It's the understanding that the essence of man's nature are the mitzvahs that he performs. That's what he's doing in his own zone. We are not in the same zone as the physical world. We're operating in a different godly zone that reflects our own godly nature. Now, where does the Maharal go from here? So now the Maharal goes further and makes an interesting point. And he says that we have to understand, and this is a point that the Maharal makes clearer in other places, but he says that this is the essence of what man is, but not all of mankind are equal in this sense. He says, if there's an entire species called man that operates on earth, that means that man, the species that we call man, is an earthly being like the rest of mankind. Like the rest of life. Just that, among some of that species, Hashem implanted that godly being that we call the neshama. And this is the Maharal's theme of this sefer, what we call Yisrael. The Yisrael really is the ultimate Adam. It's the ultimate Adam, that very, very sublime creature that Hashem called Adam, that's meant to be reflecting Him in this world, is a select group of neshamas that were inserted into physical bodies that look the same as the rest of the bodies on earth. But actually, the difference is that whereas the rest of mankind, it begins and ends with a physical body, here, the physical body is really just the shell. It's really just the external being. It's really just the shell, the outside layer of the essential being. And the essential being is the Yisrael, it's the Adam, it's the Neshama. You can use the three terms interchangeably. Now, what is the essence of the Yisrael? Now, the Maharal goes a bit of length showing how mankind in general fits into, has its place in the physical world. It's an inherent part of the physical world, whereas the Yisrael is something that really hovers above, floats above the rest of the world. In what way? What is it? What is the essential nature of the Yisrael itself? So, If we'll put it this way, I'll use a funny term to term what the essence of a Yisrael is. The essence of a Yisrael is a landing pad. That's a strange way to, a strange thing. You wouldn't have thought of yourself in that mushel, would you have? All kinds of other things, yes, but a landing pad. What do we mean by that? What we mean by that is that the purpose of the creation of this world and the essence of what Klal Yisrael is the connection of Hashem to the physical world. Hashem connects to the physical world through Yisrael. In other words, Yisrael constitutes the, so to speak, as kaviyachol, the landing, Hashem's landing pad in our world. Hashem rides on Klal Yisrael. We are the infrastructure for the Shekhinah in this world. We are the carriers of Shekhinah in this world. And that really was Hashem's entire purpose in creation. This is the term Hashras HaShekhinah. We bring about Hashras HaShekhinah. We bring about the presence of the Shekhinah in this world by making ourselves appropriate, fitting, quality, again, this sounds a little mundane, but landing pads. If you really want to use the term that's used in the Sfarim, it's called a Merkava LaShekhinah, the chariot of the Shekhinah. That's what we are, the chariot of the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is meant to shine through us. Hashem's presence in this world is meant to be manifest through us. And that is the essential definition of what a Jew is. This can be expressed in different ways. This is what we mean when we say that the Jew is Hashem's family. The Jew is the reflection of Hashem in this world. The Jew is the representative of Hashem in this world, or the ambassador of Hashem in this world. But us, through our function, through our life of Torah, we make out of ourselves that chariot, the landing pad, the carrier of the Shekhinah. And here the Maharal says that you see this manifest in a practical way. This is also a thing that the Khazari talks about at length. The Yisrael can receive Nevuah. An ordinary human being cannot. So this reflects the infrastructure of the Yisrael soul. It's a different soul. It's a different entity. It's a different being. It's something that has all the infrastructure necessary to connect on high. So this is something important to understand. It's not like there's a Navi and there's a non-Navi. There is such a thing. But actually, the Navi reflects an infrastructure, a soul with an infrastructure that enables it to connect on high, and we all have that same soul. It's a different type of soul, a soul that's capable of receiving Nevuah. Whether it does or not is another question, but a soul that's capable of receiving Nevuah is something that reflects this entity called Yisrael. And therefore, the Khazari also talks about this. He says when you see all of the, he gives a very lengthy description of the various supernatural properties that Moshe Rabbeinu demonstrated. And he says, these are all, it's not just that Moshe Rabbeinu rose to this level, these are all reflections of the potential of the soul that we all carry. We are all carriers of a soul that can connect to Hashem in the most intense way. Now when there's no Beis HaMikdash, it's not going to manifest openly like that. But nevertheless, it's still happening. The Nevuah, when a person got Nevuah, it was a manifestation of the fact that the Shekhinah rested on him in a very intense way. Ruach HaKodesh, the Maharal talks about, which continued after Nevuah wasn't happening anymore. It was once again a reflection of the fact that our souls carry an infrastructure that is unique to the Yisrael. And therefore, he goes on and explains a very cryptic chazal that we've all heard since we're very little children. Here we're toward the end of the perek, and we'll continue another few minutes. We'll be at the end of the perek. It was perek Kamad Avodah Zarah, if you happen to be following inside. In the first perek of Avodah Zarah, we have that very famous chazal, where it says that Hashem, before he gave the Torah, he circled among the nations of the world and offered them the Torah. And he said to Esav, do you want the Torah? And Esav said, well, what's in the Torah? So he said, Leitirzach, you shouldn't murder. Esav said, what do you mean? The brachas that we got is Al-Char B'chatiche, you live by your sword, we can't, it's not going to work for us. And then he went to Yishmael. And Yishmael, he says to Yishmael, do you want the Torah? They said, what does it say? He says, Leitignav, you shall not steal. They said, 1 minute, the bracha that we got is, pera adam, yada b'kol v'yad kol boy, right? We can't handle that. It won't work for us. And then he came to the B'nai Yisrael, and the B'nai Yisrael accepted the Torah. Now, that's a very cryptic chazal, because when did this discussion actually take place? Who did Hashem actually go to? Was there actually anybody who was approached and asked? So the Maharal says, with an approach that he takes to many of these chazals, that what chazal expressed as a dialogue really reflects a deeper essence of what was going on. It's expressing that the Torah as a system, as a godly system, was something, it's not something that a human being comes and performs. Torah as a way of life, as a godly system, is in its entirety, is something that is perfectly suited and compatible for that soul that we were talking about, for that neshama called the Yisrael. It's something that fits it like a glove. And anyone who doesn't have that neshama, it simply won't fit. It's not just that they had a problem with this, it was going to be hard for them. What this is expressing is that somewhere or the other, it's not going to fit. It's like if you take a glove and you try to pull it onto a foot. Here it's not going to fit, there it's not going to fit, because it's not suited for it. It's not compatible. And certainly if you try to pull a glove onto an elbow, that's what it's saying. This is something else. These other nations, they are humans. A human is something very, very great, but it's not going to be compatible with the Torah, because the Torah is suited for that very, very sublime being called the Yisrael, for that very sublime neshama called the Yisrael. And there, it fit perfectly like a glove. With all the other ones, this part didn't fit, that part didn't fit, because, once again, the Torah is a divine, godly system that fits onto a divine, godly infrastructure. And the divine, godly infrastructure is that nefesh of the Yisrael. So now, the Maharal goes on and concludes. Therefore, he says that it wasn't that there was really discussion. It was really approached. The Chazal is simply expressing that a natural nefesh, a natural human being, is just not going to be compatible with the Torah, with such a godly system in its entirety. Something won't fit. Something just will not be able to work. So then Maharal concludes with a profound point. He says, if so, you'll ask, what's with a ger? What's with a convert? And here he just gives a little cryptic answer which really reflects a broader discussion, which perhaps we'll get to, perhaps we won't. And he says that, on the contrary, by joining the Jewish people, the ger's neshama is transformed. And he actually gains the properties of the Jewish people. Now, this is something that reflects another discussion, the Maharal has it elsewhere, that the truth is that the nefesh of a human being who is not a Yisrael is not simply another aspect of the physical world. It's something much higher than that. Just that relative to the Yisrael, it's something physical, but it actually does have the potential of turning into a nefesh of the Yisrael. That's why, for example, a cat, let's not talk about cats, let's talk about a dog. A dog can become a part of the family in some families. It can be very, very loyal, very, very sincere, very, very friendly, but you know what? It can never become a ger. It can never become a ger, because at the end of the day, it's not a human being. A human being has the ability to connect to that system, but he has to connect. The Yisrael is the one who actually has that neshama, has that infrastructure. It's something operating in a godly place. It's something upon which the godly system works, fits, and the Yisrael crowned with that godly system, what the Maharal is calling the Tiferes Yisrael, the splendor of Yisrael, that Torah is what actually turns it into the chariot, into the carrier of Shekhinah. The Shekhinah shines through it in our world. Be'ezras Hashem, we should be zeicha to live up to this very, very sublime title called Adam, and reach those very lofty heights that Hashem is envisioning from all of us. We'll stop the recording now and then unmute.